Blog Talk Radio.
Fridays, they're having another karaoke contest. I'm in the lobby. I hope there isn't too much external noise behind me because it's kind of cold to step outside.
Yeah, it seems quiet.
Well, the title of tonight's show is Embrace Your Triskaidekaphobia, because tonight's broadcast happens to be on Thursday the 12th. And it's 11 p.m., and in 1 hour's time, it will be Friday the 13th. And so it was my intention to discuss, from any angle you really, I mean, we could certainly discuss the popular movie series, because I have worked with, and the movies I've done, a number of luminaries in that series. But I believe we may also, a friend, look, keep a, pay attention to the numbers coming in, Cameron, because I believe a man named Jason Vail, who is a former editor of Fangoria magazine, said that he would like to try to call in. He would actually like to discuss the Friday the 13th TV series.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
At the risk of hogging the show, I suppose I should allow either Cameron or our host, John Link, to open up some comments on this topic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of the Friday the 13th series. Starring Louise Roby and who else was it? Forgot the rest of their names. But, yeah, that show, it really had nothing to do with the Friday the 13th movies. It was
had the same producers. It was the same producers. That was the only link there was, I believe, if I remember correct, is that Sean Cunningham produced both series.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
I think I could be wrong.
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but I was talking to some authorities about Friday the 13th, Andy and Keith of the Talking Terror crew, and I learned some facts about the series that I had never known before, the series of movies. As we all know, I mean, there is no killer Jason Voorhees in the first Friday the 13th. I mean, you know, at the risk of it being a spoiler on a movie that's, 35 years old, I mean, you know, Betsy Palmer, Jason's mother, is the killer who's on a killing rampage because, you know, the camp counselors years ago let retarded son drown. But, you know, the history behind the movie, you know, Cunningham was planning on making this picture, but he had with Wes Craven doing movies like Last House on the Left, but when he approached the producers to get money to do Friday the 13th, the first movie, all he had was a poster. He designed this poster, and, you know, with the silhouette of the killer with the knife and kids in the woods, and he actually essentially just sort of lied and said, yeah, we got this movie planned, we're already producing it, it's already in production, but there was no script, there was nothing. And they liked the image, and they liked this reputation, and they said, yeah, we want it, we're interested. They had to make it fast. What's it called? And he just sort of pulled Friday the 13th, like, out of his ass, and he figured, Friday the 13th, and just figured, and he just, like, sort of rambled and said, yeah, a whole bunch of murders are occurring on Friday the 13th. A bunch of people get killed, blah, 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 out in the woods. Kind of like just dreamt it up. But his original intent in or a series, I heard these were going to be like, they weren't at all. They were simply going to be a series of movies that were going to differ, almost like the TV series, where just terrible things were going to happen on Friday the 13th. Just, it would have been something totally different, but the producers, this is where it doesn't make any sense, but this is why it doesn't make sense. The producers, apparently, and the distributors, Paramount, urged him. We want a continuation of that first one. We want you to bring that Jason Voorhees back as a killer. They kind of like forced them to do it, even though it defies all logic. Just something I never knew until this past week.
Do you know that actually that is almost the same way that the Halloween movies came to be, how they were produced? Sorry if my voice is a little rough here tonight. But the original idea for Halloween was for each movie to take place. John Carpenter had the idea for each movie to take place on Halloween, but it would be a different story. Hence why in part three there was no Michael Myers, you know, it was all about the mask company and whatnot. But John Carpenter's hand was pretty much forced, and the producer's hands were, you know, they wanted the continuation of the Michael Myers, you know, mythos and whatnot. And hence why it didn't make sense to have two movies in a row of about Michael Myers, and then the third one to not be about Michael Myers. It kind of, hence probably why that's probably the least popular one of the series. But the Halloween and the Friday 13th pretty much had the same parallel. Neither one of them were supposed to have that iconic character. Each movie was supposed to be different.
I, for one, though, I don't know where you stand on this, Cameron or John Link, but I, for one, am a big fan of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
I love it.
I find it very annoying with playing that song over and over again.
I kind of like the song, to be honest. It's catchy. To me, you know, the movie probably would have been 100 times more successful if they would have just called it The Season of the Witch and dropped Halloween from the title altogether. And people wouldn't have probably hated it as much as they do. I personally love the movie. I think Tom Atkins has probably never been better in it, and is beautifully directed. It's got a great John Carpenter soundtrack. I like it. It's probably my besides Halloween 2, which is my favorite of the series, ranks pretty up there.
I was going to say, unfortunately, this wouldn't apply to you. I always like to mention to our listeners, the new ones. I mean, Cameron, where are you right now?
I am in Champaign, Illinois.
Champaign, Illinois. And you should be drinking champagne. You'll feel better. And John Link is in Richfield, New Jersey, which is near the George Washington Bridge. And I'm in New Jersey. But this, starting tomorrow and running through Sunday, is the Monster Mania convention in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, at the Crown Plaza Hotel on Route 70, right across the river from Philadelphia. And they actually are having a Friday the 13th 35th anniversary reunion gathering, and a rare convention appearance. I believe it's only his second ever, a rare convention appearance from Sean S. Cunningham himself, the producer and director, and really the creator, the creator of Friday the 13th. That should be interesting. I've never met the guy.
Mm.
I have met Crave, but I've never had a chance to meet Cunningham.
Mm. You know, I have to say the only one of the classic directors like that I think that I've ever met was George Romero, which is not too shabby one to meet, but I've still never met Craven. Craven, I'd love to be able to sit and pick that guy's brain a little bit.
So sadly, and I hope this has a happy resolution, they also were having like a Devil's Rejects contingent, and at the last minute I heard Sid Haig, who was supposed to be there with Bill Moseley and William Forsythe, Sid Haig is not there because apparently he's in the hospital, and I don't know why. He's 75 years old.
I tried to look it up. No, it's an undisclosed illness, and that he was hospitalized in January too.
This is bad then. If he's been hospitalized twice since the year began, he is 75 years old.
Yeah,
and he's a friend of mine and one of my acting mentors. He helped me a lot when I started acting, and essentially, Sid Haig really coached me and helped me develop the role of Gerald for the Green Monster, the only role I've won an award for in a competitive, film festival. And I was voted best actor at the second Macabre Fair Film Festival, but I thank Sid Haig. I owed it all to him. I hope he's doing all right. But relating to Friday the 13th, I just thought I'd mention some of my ties to this movie are, my first movie that I ever acted in, my first professional movie, which is 9.5 years ago now, God, Sea of Dust, a Hammer film tribute. Tom Savini, it's his first leading role as the villain of the movie. I play Dr. Maitland, one of the ill-fated heroes. It's also Ingrid Pitt's swan song. I had the pleasure of working with the great makeup artist, Tom Savini, who was the real top-billing star of the original Friday the 13th. That was the first movie ever where the makeup effects man got top billing. Before there was a Jason Voorhees the Killer, a lot of people have forgotten, that movie was promoted on the basis of the fact that there would be 13 really spectacular and gory deaths in it. It was the gag effects that were the star of the movie. I think you knew that, right, Cameron?
Actually, yeah, I had read that many times over the years. Yep.
And then further with the Friday the 13th crew, two of my very best films, my biggest successes, Mr. Hush and E.P. The Emerging Past, which has gone through a re-editing process, and it is going to be re-released on May 1st at the New York International Film Festival in New York City. Look for it on Facebook. May 1st it will be showing in New York City, which I think is a Saturday at 6 p.m. But I worked with Steve Dash in those two movies. Steve Dash is the first of the killer Jason Voorhees. He is Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th Part 2. Before the hockey mask, when Jason wore a burlap sack with one eye hole in it, and overalls and a flannel shirt. And of course, I'm also good friends with Betsy Palmer, who I actually met when I was I met her before I was acting, when I was working for a telemarketing company. And I saw this number on my screen on the computer. We were dialing it, and it was Betsy Palmer in Manhattan. And she started yelling at me about, she was sick of these telemarketers trying to shake her down for money. Why don't we just leave her the hell alone? And I said, look, ma'am, I will leave you alone. I'm just going to totally forget my sales pitch. I want to ask, I'm looking at your name, are you the Betsy Palmer? And she's like, well, of course I'm the Betsy Palmer. I said, I mean the actress, Betsy Palmer. And she was like, yes. I said, what, Friday the 13th, Betsy Palmer, Mrs. Voorhees? She was like, is that what I'm going to be remembered for? She said, I've done Broadway plays. I was the star of TV series. I was in Mr. Roberts. You actually are going to remember me for Friday the 13th. And she goes, that piece of shit. But we had a lot of laughs on the phone, and I told her, I said, you know, I could see your number before me. I said, you know, I've had a lovely time talking to you. This is before I was an actor. I said, you wouldn't mind if I called you to say hello now and then? And she said, no, not at all. She goes, if I'm able to talk, I'll talk. So I do call Betsy now and then, and we've been friends. But it's been a weird tie I've had to the Friday the 13th people and other people that were in the series too.
Now, is it true I had read that Steve Dash is retired now, correct?
Steve Dash is, I believe, 72 years old now, and we had to coax him out of retirement back in September to do the Mr. Hush Weekend of Fear Part 2, because he's in Mr. Hush, and he is a good friend of mine, and he's really been a great supporter. Like Sid Haig, Steve Dash has been a great supporter of mine. He had announced that the previous Mr. Hush convention was going to be his last convention appearance, which and the original Mr. Hush Weekend of Fear, which was in 2010, Betsy Palmer, that was at the time her last. She hasn't done a convention appearance since then, but yeah, Steve is retired now. He has told me, he said, look, he's an ex-cop. An ex-cop who was wounded on the job at 12 years a police officer, New York City police officer. And because he was hurt, they didn't want him to like work the streets anymore or like do heavy arrests. He said, I wasn't going to be chained to a desk doing paperwork, so he quit being a cop, and that drove him into becoming an actor. And he said he felt he was still physically fit enough to do stunts, so he became, he was doing community theater. Then he graduated to some low-budget films and announced he could do stunt work and said, actually, you know, his whole view of being Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th Part 2, he was as a stuntman job. He had no idea. And, well, nobody did. Nobody did until Part 3 was a success. He had no idea it was going to become an institution. But he actually turned down the opportunity to play Jason Voorhees in Part 3, which is in 3D. He said no. And the Englishman, Richard Brooker, who unfortunately we lost last year, the first so far and only of the Jasons to die. But yes, Steve Dash, unfortunately, and he was adamant when I saw him in September. He said, you know, I'm not going to play like Frank Sinatra. I came out once because, you know, Dave Madison begged me to do this because I really, really am retiring after this convention. No more. It's done. Because, you know, I want to just enjoy my grandchildren and my retirement with the years I got left. So, I'm sorry if you never got to meet him, Cameron.
Yeah, it would have been. Actually, you know, I didn't get to meet Richard Brooker before he passed away, but actually there was a Horror Hound convention about 2.5 years ago. I actually got to meet Steve Dash there. That was actually not too long after he was in the Collective Volume 3, the volume that he acted in, the short that Vanessa Romanelli did. And I got to meet him, and that's when I explained to him, I go, yeah, I actually wrote that movie. So we actually had a pretty nice, me, him, and his wife that was there with him, had a nice little conversation for, it was on Sunday, it was the slow day of the convention, so we got to have a nice little half an hour chat, which was, considering myself pretty lucky, so at least I did get to catch Steve before he retired, so.
And you know, the irony is, I was supposed to play the junkie in the that Collective, the episode that you wrote, but Susie Palermo, whose song opens this show every week, Zombies, Zombies Everywhere, my fiance, was so desperately sick at the time that I had to opt out of it. And I actually urged Vanessa Romanelli to replace me with Kevin Van Henterick from Basket Case, and she got a hold of Kevin, and he was delighted. It was the first acting he'd done in years. So I was glad I was able to get Kevin Van Henterick back into acting again. He, of course, played Dwayne in the Basket Case series.
Yeah, actually, talking with Kevin about possibly, nothing is set in stone yet, but we've been corresponding back and forth here a little bit about him possibly doing a small part in the Crocodile Chronicles that I'm producing next. So I'll keep my fingers crossed on that to get him into a feature film.
I would hope that you can, because I'd like to have a chance to act with him. He's been a very good and supportive friend to me, but we haven't had a chance to act in the same movie together yet. Although we are in a couple of movies where we were never on set at the same time, but maybe that might change with the Crocodile Chronicles, which I'm very excited about. And I did print the original script that you emailed me, but now I see that you actually have a revised script that I should print tomorrow.
It just got some minor changes. There's a whole sequence at the beginning that explains the effects of crocodile on people, and I kind of added a few more title sequences and things into it. It's very minimal. Your dialogue and whatnot won't change in it at all. But
I'm just going to ask I'm going to say that there's nobody in the queue. There's no number waiting to get in, is there? There's only 6 minutes left for people to call in. It'll go on to 20.
Yeah, I've been keeping a close eye on it. I haven't seen any numbers pop up quite yet.
Well, maybe we'll get him for a future show because he's a former Fangoria editor who actually, you know, knows a lot of anecdotes, behind-the-scenes anecdotes about the Friday the 13th people. And he's a huge fan. He's a huge fan of the TV series. And there aren't, you know, why did the TV series fizzle into obscurity? I mean, it's kind of a failure in many ways. I liked it, but I guess the meat audience demanded a Jason Voorhees, I guess.
Well, a few years ago, Louise Roby was a guest at show, and I was talking to her, and I asked her that question. She said that they just had enough episodes in syndication.
Well, you know, it's like an obscure trivia question. It isn't a beloved series. A lot of people didn't really watch it because it wasn't about a guy in a hockey mask with a machete every week. I think that's what they wanted.
I did. I'm a big fan of the series, and I still watch it on video.
And I want to ask Cameron. You can hear me clearly, right, Cameron?
Yep, can hear you pretty good.
I mean, I'm honored that I have this role in the Crocodile Chronicles, but I I understand. I think you said in this movie you have a role for John Lincoln. He's going to play my toady, right?
Well, wait a minute. Wait. Hey, Cameron, I don't play toadies anymore.
Well,
no,
we were going to have you play. He was going to play two toadies because we're going to put him in a blonde wig so he can play the toady's twin brother. I mean, because we don't want to cast Fred.
I don't play servants anymore.
Or any less, right?
No, any less either.
Actually, no. I don't know what you have in mind for John Lake, but I think I can just picture him as a hopeless crocodile junkie on his way out.
Yeah, that'll be good, yeah.
Lying in his own filth, his skin rotting off his body, kind of the way John Lake is.
yeah, that I could do.
That you could do. You could do that one, all right.
Yeah.
You know, just drooling like black shit, you know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't need a lot of makeup. Wouldn't need a whole lot of makeup.
Yeah, that's right.
Pardon me, fellas. Oh, sorry.
I would like to get some more comments from you, Cameron, about Friday the 13th, the movies or the TV series.
You know, I have to admit, although I did like the television series somewhat, I wasn't a huge fan. I mean, back in the day, in that day and age, there wasn't a whole lot in the way of horror-themed television. There really wasn't. I mean, in that day and age, there was Tales from the Crypt, Tales from the Dark Side. Freddy's Nightmares was right around that same time, but there wasn't a whole lot of horror television. So although I did watch it, I wasn't a huge fan. To be honest, the television sort of series I found to be somewhat boring. Well done, but just boring. But now the film series, however, I grew up on that shit. Pardon my language, but I grew up on that. Every summer, every fall, there would always be a new Friday the 13th film, and I was always looking forward to that. I was out of all the famous horror movie villains, Jason was my favorite, above Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, or any of those. But I don't know why. I don't know what it is. Maybe someone else can shed some light on this. But there was something that always had me rooting for Jason Voorhees, and where I didn't find myself rooting for the other guys quite so much, but I would root for Jason. I would root for Jason to get all these horny teenagers and different people. They were, you know, they were invading his territory. They had no business being there. I love this series. I love when they implemented the hockey mask in part 3, which that carried over as an iconic look, which was funny that Jason's iconic look really didn't come along until the third film.
Mm.
And, you know, I had a long conversation with Brooker. Did I ever tell the story on the air about where the hockey mask came from?
No, certainly not while I've been around, I don't think.
In the end of Friday the 13th Part 2, the way that movie went, Steve Dash told me that Friday the 13th Part 2, when the producers insisted on bringing Jason back, even though a lot of people argued, including Savini and Betsy Palmer, but you know, my motivation for killing all these counselors was they let my young son drown because they were out having sex. So if he didn't really drown, he's living in a shack in the woods, why am I killing people because they let him drown? But in the part 2 with the original killer, Jason, Steve Dash told me they deliberately, intentionally, with fear that maybe this was going to flop, tried to rip off the town that dreaded sundown. He said, my costume is identical to the killer in the town that dreaded sundown, a burlap sack with one eye hole, you know, a red flannel shirt and overalls and like, you know, work boots. Steve Dash did his whole scene, I mean his whole movie, without ever showing Jason's face, and they wrapped the film. And the producers said, we really want Jason's face to be seen. And they'd already finished the movie, but they came back and they shot an additional scene where they hired Warrington Gillette to come in. This is where the big controversy, Warrington Gillette versus Steve Dash. And Warrington Gillette did the one scene where Jason gets unmasked, and we see this hideously deformed face. Anyhow, in part three, they had Stan Winston do the makeup, and Jason was supposed to be maskless, like a hideously deformed mutant monster, a behemoth. And they put this makeup together, and when the makeup was done and the masks were finished, which cost them a big part of their budget, it was still a very low-budget film, they realized, quite to their horror and dismay, their business horrors, they realized that the monster that was designed for Friday the 13th Part 3 looked almost identical to Sloth from the Goonies. The lovable ogre in the Goonies. And they said, you know, if we have him going out there, people aren't going to be scared. They're going to see the similarity, and they're going to laugh at Jason. They're going to say he's Sloth. And Brooker told me that the director, I think Miner was the director on that, Steve. I'm not sure. Whatever, the director said, then, you know, give him some other kind of mask, something to cover his face, something now. And the burlap sack was not an option because Steve Dash said it was extremely awkward, and he was frequently just blind, like running into trees, slipping and hurting himself. He said he still has scars all over his body. He essentially did that role blind because the one eye hole would move around. Suddenly, you're not seeing. So the director said, get something to cover his face, something, anything, some kind of a mask. And I think it was like the electrician on the set said, you know, I think I got like a hockey goalie mask in the back of my truck because my son's on a hockey team. And they were like, fine, get it. Yeah, that's good. Get it. Great. And they said, but this is a summer camp. They're like, just, you know, leave it on the porch. It'll be like, you know, during the winter, maybe they play hockey. And like, whatever, just get the fucking mask. And so it was just like a side thought. Like, they grabbed the mask out of the truck, threw it in the porch, just to cover that face that looked like Sloth from the Goonies. They have Brooker put this mask on. And they still wanted to show the makeup. So from a distance, at the end of the movie, from the window of the barn, we see him at a distance just so they can make use of the makeup at the end of the movie because they didn't want people to have a chance to laugh and call him Sloth. But it's amazing how the hockey mask came about by accident on the spur of the moment. And now a hockey mask is more associated with Jason Voorhees than the sport of hockey.
I did not know that that's how. It's funny that how the look of probably one of the more infamous movie serial killers was pretty much an accident.
Yeah. You know, I've only seen the first movie, the one with Betsy Palmer and Steve Dash. I don't know if I've ever seen any the other Jason movies.
Link, you got to be kidding me. There are 10 sequels and a remake.
I don't know if I've seen any of the rest.
The series has so far stretched from 1980 to like 2006, man.
Yeah. Well, it always seemed like a lack of logic.
Jason
that this
Voorhees
guy would still be alive after he drowned.
Well, Jason Voorhees is the Frankenstein monster of our generation.
Yeah.
I can't believe
I don't think I've seen any of the others, but I'm a big fan of the TV show. That was based on a book by the Warrens, this phony demonologist couple. That the late Dr. Stephen Kaplan, he told me about that how they perjured themselves in court, and Kaplan was glad that the Warrens didn't get any money for the Friday the 13th TV series, even though it was based on their book, the basic premise.
Well, I was going to comment on Cameron's speculation because I think I agree with Cameron. Of the new monsters of our generation since the 80s, I mean, the new Frankenstein, Dracula, and Wolfman, you know, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, I do like Jason best. And I think I know why. Because
why?
Jason Voorhees, I mean, the other two, Myers and Freddy, are always the same. But Jason Voorhees has a remarkable character arc. He has changed and mutated and transformed and transmogrified over all those films, become something very different from how he started, ever-changing. So at first being, you know, the kid that died in the lake, to being like just some psychopath in the woods. In the middle of the series, he's actually a crazed, is he an ex-cop or an ex-EMS guy who's avenging his son's death by pretending to be Jason Voorhees? Remind me, Cameron, what was he in that one?
Part five, he was an EMT. He was
an
EMT.
Was to avenge his son, and then we have like soul leaping, and then we have Jason finally like just risen from the grave by a lightning bolt, where now he is a supernatural being, and then ultimately he's in outer space. I mean, I think with me every year, you know, we sat around waiting to see what Jason was going to change into. In many ways, he was like the alien, constantly shape-shifting, emerging as something new and different. He was a very fascinating character. Not to belittle Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger, but they were constant. They didn't change.
And, you know, I think I always felt as if the origin of Jason, he started out as a victim. He was a little kid that was pretty much a victim of bullying and, you know, and neglect. And because of the abuse and neglect, he ended up drowning, you know. So, I mean, he came back for vengeance against those who wronged him. And let's face it, Freddy Krueger was a child killer. Michael Myers was just a psychopath. But with Jason, you always felt like, you know, in the beginning, he was just this poor kid who was born semi-mutated and disfigured and was, you know, subsequently died because of it. So I think there, even in the later years, you always had that in the back of your head. There was that little bit of sympathy for him. At least in my eyes, there was a little bit of sympathy.
Jason Voorhees and John Lick are almost identical life stories.
Yeah. Oh, you know, Ed. You're leaving out Mary Lou Maloney.
Then I'll let you take that, John Link. You need to talk more.
That was Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. Have you ever seen it?
Yes, I do like that movie a lot.
I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
It's got some great nudity in it, too, with that natural blonde.
Yeah. too bad they couldn't make a series from it because it was unworkable as a franchise because they have to use a different actress with each movie. She always has to look 17.
I wanted to ask Cameron an opinion though because I pretty much like all the Friday the 13th movies except for I personally like Derek Mears. He's a great guy, but I really don't like the so-called remake. I really do not like that movie.
I'm with you on that. Most times I don't like remakes. I still like to give them their fair day in court and, you know, give them a shot. I liked Derek Mears as Jason. I think Derek Mears did a great Jason. You know, he embodied everything that Jason Voorhees was, but you know, just some of the acting choices, the actors that were in that film and just the way it was handled, it was just, it did nothing for me. I didn't look upon it as a horrible film, but, you know, there's always, you know, that's what I say, what makes a difference between a great film and a good film. And the remake was just kind of so-so. It was good, but it wasn't great. It just didn't spark anything in me. I just found it a little lackluster.
It wasn't a remake. It was because if it was a remake, you wouldn't have Jason Voorhees in it running around. The thing is, it had the taste of a movie that was made by businessmen and not film artists.
Yeah.
It should have been. If they had that kind of money, and wasn't Michael Bay responsible for that too? Wasn't he the big name? Wasn't Michael Bay the producer of that?
I think the same production company that Michael Bay's production company did that and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot.
I mean, with the money at their disposal and the 3D technology, they should have done the next chapter in the series. They should have advanced the story, you know? I mean,
Instead
of an alleged remake, which now just messes everything up. And I heard, believe it or not, which disappoints me, I heard they're actually making a sequel to the remake.
I don't know. I mean, I have my doubts of whether or not that film will ever happen. It seems like they've been talking about it for 3 years solid. I don't know. There's also the rumors that there's going to be another Friday the 13th television series, but this one being actually based off of... No, the Jason Voorhees Friday the 13th and not the old TV series. So that's a trend that I see happening a lot, them taking these old classic cult horror films and turning them into television series like The New Evil Dead. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work out, if it's meant for television or not.
I just feel that all the other movies, even though they were low budget, and certainly these exploitation films are made to make money, that there was heart and soul in every one of them. And there were attempts by the writers and the directors to do something new and different with this character. It didn't always work. I mean, some of them were misses, but they were still interesting misses. But yet I really was down on the last one, the alleged remake. Yet I liked Derek Mears a lot, and as Jason, he was great. But then, utterly lackluster story as formula as you could possibly be, you know? With a collection of victims, like right out of an MTV reality show. It's terrible.
Yeah. That's my thought on it as well.
Well, we have minutes left. I'm just curious, Cameron, what is your favorite of the Friday the 13th movies?
You know, it's really a toss-up. I have two. I like Friday the 13th 3 for there's many reasons. I love the horribly cheesy discotheque type soundtrack that they did with the crazy music and the 3D aspect. But really, really, really had to narrow it down. I would say Part 6 is my favorite one because that's kind of the what I consider the Frankenstein / zombie version of Jason for Scott introduced, you know, when he was resurrected with, lightning and whatnot, which is extremely reminiscent of the Frankenstein films.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, it has an entire Alice Cooper soundtrack. Every single song on that soundtrack, besides the incidental music, is all Alice Cooper tunes. And when you got Alice Cooper doing the Friday the 13th, Jason Voorhees theme song, you got me. I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan, so that one holds a special place in my heart.
You're probably right.
It's a perfect marriage. In the 1980s, if you put Alice Cooper and Jason Voorhees together, it was like a marriage or match made in heaven or hell, but it's depending how you look at it.
It was like putting the Ramones with Pet Sematary.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember I liked the movie, but I really wish Jason Takes Manhattan could have been more, being a New Yorker as I am. I mean, you know, I felt cheated that they shot the whole damn thing in Vancouver, British Columbia, and they're calling it Jason Takes Manhattan.
Well, let's not forget the controversy.
One scene they shot in Times Square, just so they could say part of it was shot in New York. One scene.
Well, then they had the huge controversy at the time with the whole I Love New York slogan poster being slashed in half by Jason Voorhees, and all those got taken off the market. when they were doing their big push.
They have Jason emerge from a subway station in Times Square. There's no subway station in Times Square.
They kind of got the geography a little messed up on that, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. We have seconds to go.
Oh.